Today's episode is brought to you by our sponsoring partner, the Campaign for Black Male Achievement. CBME has worked over the past decade to support Black men and boys to provide them the right word or the right person at the right time on their journey towards realizing their full potential. I value CBME's efforts, their focus, and the investments that they have made to define this new field for Black male achievement and to rewrite the narrative that we want for our country. If you've not yet done so, I urge you to visit tbpod.com/partners today and learn more about CBME and consider joining their membership and investing in the future of our Black men and boys.
You're listening to the Trailblazers.fm podcast, where we'll explore the stories of today's successful Black professionals, entrepreneurs, and leaders. Join us to access the knowledge, resources, and tools of these accomplished professionals and come away with the know-how, confidence, and motivation you'll need to blaze your trail. And now, here's your host, Stephen A. Hart.
Hello and welcome to the Trailblazers.fm podcast. I'm your host, Stephen A. Hart. This is our second episode in our 2019 Trailblazers Entrepreneur Series. In case you missed last week's episode, I do want you to go back after listening to today's content and check out our conversation with Eric Thomas, E.T. the Hip Hop Preacher. If you're an accomplished or maybe even an aspiring entrepreneur, we've got a ton of great information coming your way over the course of these next 6 weeks. So stay locked in, keep listening, and begin putting some of these gems that you hear into application right away. Our featured guest today is Tamika Rochester. Tamika is the owner and founder of Harlem Cycle, Harlem's first and only indoor cycling studio. And Tamika is a Spelman alum who studied mechanical engineering and math in undergrad, then went on to get an MBA. And in today's episode, she got really transparent and shared her story and her pivot to entrepreneurship and becoming a business owner and that transition from a stable career in the corporate world. So grab a pad and a pen, open your favorite note-taking app right now, and get set to receive today's mission fuel from our feature trailblazer, Tamika Rochester. Tamika, welcome to Trailblazers.fm. It is a pleasure to chat it up with you tonight.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm super, super excited.
Yes. I'd love to start things off where we do on all our episodes and ask you to share an unexpected blessing or opportunity that you're most grateful for in your life right now.
Right now, it is really just my clients. Like, they keep coming back and, you know, it's, you get into business thinking, well, of course they're going to keep coming back, but it is always just so unexpected to see how much they root for the business and how much they're willing to extend themselves without even being asked, and just having like these people that just enter your life and have just been a blessing since the moment we started a business.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. Before we talk business, I'd love to share a little bit about you and about your background, right? So I know you went to college in Atlanta. Is that where you're from? Are you from Georgia?
No. I'm from St. Elizabeth, Jamaica. So,
born there. Yeah. I never know that.
Yes.
Good stuff. That's awesome.
So we came over when I was about 5. So, I was raised in Atlanta and I've been now in New York for about 10 years.
Good deal. I saw that you're someone who loves a good education. You have like 3 degrees.
Yes. So, I started my career, I started my schooling with a degree in mathematics from Spelman College. I did the dual degree program.
That's so what I was wondering.
Yeah. So it was 3 years at Spelman coming out with a mathematics degree, and then 2 years at Georgia Tech where I left with my mechanical engineering degree. And then a couple years later, decided to get my MBA with a focus on marketing and entrepreneurship.
Wow. That's awesome. So let me ask you about the dual degree program. And a good friend of mine, Candice, I think did the same program. How does that work? Are you a commuter? Are you at Spelman? Kind of how did that work?
It's a really challenging program. So you are at Spelman for 3 full years and you need to finish your 4-year degree in 3 years. So if you're like doubling up as far as the number of class credits. So you finish within those 3 years. So at the end of 3 years, I could have just been like, all right, I'm good. Thank you. It's been fun. And walked away with a math degree. But for those of us who wanted a little bit more, So we went on to, so then you become a transfer student to the engineering institution. And for me, it was Georgia Tech. And then from there, you spend 2 years finishing up at Georgia Tech. So the good thing is your undergraduate degree has to be in a science so that those class credits count towards your engineering degree. Because remember, your first 2 years at any engineering school is all science, math related, and English. So we all take kind of the same general classes. Mm. So your Spelman undergraduate courses counted as well as those first 2 years at Georgia Tech. So you just need those last two where you really focus on just the major courses, which is tough because... You have 2 years of just engineering classes. There's no sociology or arts class to kind of lighten the load, to kind of, you know, help just with the intensity of class. So it is strictly 2 years of just engineering classes, which is, it's not for the weak at heart.
I'm curious, did that dilute the Spelman experience?
It did. It did. I mean, I love Spelman. I bleed blue, but it definitely dilutes it. One is that you finish with a class that you didn't start with. So, you know, my class, I don't know them as well because I had to leave them behind after the first semester because I had to double up and I was taking with the class with me. And then their senior year when everyone's at Spelman and doing these great, amazing senior events, I'm in class. So it does dilute the experience. I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. I love being an engineer. I love the times that I was at Spelman, but I definitely don't have the same memories as some of my counterparts.
Mm. So tell me, but we're going to jump into Harlem Cycle in a second, but what happened after college?
So after college, I started working with Colgate-Palmolive. I worked as an engineer in their supply chain. So it was great. Traveled the world. I was responsible for creating, you know, and helping to design some of their manufacturing facilities overseas and around the world. And then so just making sure their equipment was up to snuff, making sure they're standardized across the different plants. So it was really, really great. And then from there, I decided to go to school at night at NYU. So I was traveling from New Jersey, driving to New York at night and on weekends to get my MBA.
I wanted to ask you, do you know Candy V. Mitchell, Candace Mitchell?
No.
So that's one of our early guests. She did the exact same program you did.
Is she an attorney? A patent attorney?
Actually, no. She's an entrepreneur as well and runs a business. She's in the hair tech industry. And runs a business down in Atlanta. I'll connect you to her because, like, as you're talking, I'm like, Candace did the exact same program.
Yeah, I know. I listened to a couple of episodes. So you've had about three of us now. There was a patent attorney that did the same program.
Yes, yes. 200 episodes. I'm like, still, Candace was probably like episode 9 or 10.
So oh, wow. Yeah.
Early on. So let's fast forward, right? Today, you're the owner and founder of Harlem Cycle, Harlem's first and only indoor cycle studio.
Yes.
Tell me about what sparked the idea.
So I love working out. You know, I grew up, you know, doing sports and ran track in high school, played tennis. So I was always someone who really enjoyed working out. And then when I moved to New York, I have an 8-year-old. So after having my son, I was like, well, I would really love to get back in shape. And then I wanted something that kind of relieved, you know, it's a lot of stress being a mother. So I wanted to get kind of back to that happy place of my childhood experiences. And for me, it was all about riding my bike. Loved riding my bike. And then growing up in Atlanta, all you did was ride your bike, like around the neighborhood. So I wanted to try to ride bikes around the city. So I actually rented a bike, strapped my son on the back. He was about 5 months old.
Wow.
It was the scariest experience of my life.
Because he's behind you.
He's behind me. The weight shifted. New York people do not respect people on bikes. I thought we were going to die. Like, we walked over to the park. And even in that, just crossing two streets to get to the park, it was just too much. By the time I got there, I was shaking. It was a terrible experience. And I came back to work. And, you know, at the time, I was working at Colgate. And I told my coworker about it and how I spent the whole weekend just after that in bed and refusing to leave my apartment because it was just so much for me emotionally. She was like, well, try indoor cycling. If you want to ride a bike, do indoor cycling. And I was like, that doesn't sound fun. You're inside of a room. You're not going anywhere. It just didn't sound that great. But, you know, I'm always open to try something at least once. Mm-hmm. So gave it a shot, went to a boutique studio downtown. I don't even think it's still open, but I don't even remember the name. It was really nice. So the class was great. The instructor was nice and friendly. The facilities were super, you know, posh and very nice. But the music was terrible. Terrible. Now, remember, I am Jamaican and grew up in Atlanta. Yeah. So I know reggae. I know soca. I know hip hop. that's what I that's what speaks to my soul.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, I mean, the class is nice, but I can't spend 45 more minutes listening to that music. I just can't do it. So I started looking around in my neighborhood and I found, you know, the YMCA up the street had cycling classes. And I was like, oh, it's the Harlem YMCA. Gotta have the music. I wasn't wrong. It had great music. It had terrible customer service.
Wow.
The facilities were a bit dated. And then it had just like really just outdated systems where you had to wait an hour and a half before to sign in and then wait for a bite. It just didn't make any sense. So I was like, wow, this is crazy, you know, that we can't like have the same thing from downtown uptown, but with an uptown feel, like the uptown music and culture. So one day I'm out for a run and I'm like, I saw this like abandoned building storefront that had like store for rent sign. I was like, oh, this would be awesome if it was a cycling studio right here, right? Like I could just run to it and it'd be great. And you know, as you're running, you know how thoughts come as you're running. So I'm like, wait a minute. Do this. I'm gonna go home. Let me run some numbers. You know, the engineer in me comes out every time. Let me pull out some numbers. And as I'm like, okay, I can do this. So I started writing my business plan and I was like, okay.
Wow.
That was November. And by April, I built it out and we had our first class.
Really?
It happened that fast.
Wow. That's amazing. So hold on. Pause for a second. How do you transition though? Because you're an engineer by training. Right. Well, you did do an MBA.
Yeah, I had my MBA and I had transitioned into marketing at Colgate. So, So I'd worked as an engineer and then I transitioned over to the marketing department where they had me in charge of one of the largest brands. Didn't love marketing.
No.
It was very different than engineering. Engineering was, you know, we were a team with a common goal. Marketing, it was like we were all fighting for the top position and we didn't realize we were like, it was just very weird to me to transition to that kind of environment.
Really?
Yeah. So I didn't love marketing at all, actually.
I'm in marketing and I don't feel it right now. But, you know, I will say like I transitioned to, I'm now in cybersecurity and I am working with a company that has been like a dream, as much of a dream as working a corporate job.
Yeah.
For my entrepreneurial wiring, could be. And it's been amazing, but I feel you on that. Because I'm coming from working in a software company where me and engineers bumped heads all day. I'm sure your engineers probably gave you side eye when you went to marketing.
Oh, did they? They would call me on the, like, Tamika, you're going to the dark side. What are you doing? What's happening? all the time. But, you know, the reason I got into marketing was as an engineer, I was like, who's making these decisions? Like, who's coming up with these ideas? I had to know, why was I being asked to redesign a whole plant just to create this one product that I saw wasn't going to sell? And so I was like, who made this decision? And so I was like, I got to figure out, I got to be on the other side because these decisions are flowing down to me and I'm not happy with them. But I got there and realized I didn't enjoy the work. I just didn't. But it did teach me a lot, you know, so getting that MBA helped a lot with creating the business plan, putting the ideas to paper, and really kind of working through those ideas. So that I am thankful for.
Yes. So how did that transition happen, right? Like, was this what you talked about, November to April? Was this full jump ship? Was this part-time hustle? Like, talk me through that.
I wish it was full jump ship, but I did not have the money for that. So I actually kept my job. So we opened up in April and I worked until February of the following year, full time still. It was a tough year. So
yeah, because you have your son as well.
My son, and it was really tough for him as well. I didn't even, you know, you just get in the habit of doing things so much, your body stays in motion until you finally take a break. We would wake up every morning 5:45 to be at the studio to open up for 6 o'clock classes.
Wow.
Then I'd drop him off at daycare. I'd head downtown and be at my desk by 9 o'clock. 5 o'clock, I'm running out the door to make sure I picked him up so we could go back here to open up his for 6 p.m. classes. Yeah. And then we're here every night till 8:30. And that was every single day. We're open 7 days a week. In the 4 years that we've been open, I've only closed 3 days and those were Christmas. We only close on Christmas. So it's tough. I actually gained almost 40 pounds my first year.
Owning a family.
So that says a lot.
Yeah, you're working in the business.
Yeah, well, and it's the level of stress that was behind it. Particularly when it's your first business and particularly when it's your first year, because everything comes at you the first year. You have no idea what's going to come, but it comes at you that first year. And having to still hold that 9 to 5, it was tough.
So what was the pivot? What was the kind of writing on the wall that, all right, I need to jump now. Was it crossing a certain financial marker, or was it just like, you know, this is time?
You know, I always tell people, I wish I had the courage to have made the leap, but I was pushed. I remember sitting down with my manager at the time, and, you know, she looked at me and she's like, you know, Tamika, I feel like, you know, they had just found out like a month earlier, because I kept it to myself at Harlem Cycle, but we had gotten such great press. We had been on the New York Times. We got like all this great press that
you couldn't hide it.
You couldn't hide it anymore. And so, you know, we're sitting there, she's like, you know, I just feel like you don't want to be here. And at that point, I was drained. Mm-hmm. And I was like, do you understand what it took for me to get here today? Mm-hmm. Like, do you, like, it just blew my mind, because I was like, I am giving you 100%. And I really actually don't want to be here. But I am
100% or 100% of what's left.
Yes. I am drained physically from just getting here every day. And that was on a Friday. That Monday I came in and I was like, I'm submitting my 2 weeks notice. And tomorrow I'm taking vacation for those last 2 weeks. I can't do this anymore. So that conversation was like the push for me. I physically couldn't do it anymore.
Wow. That's interesting. You know, like that, sometimes we think like, oh, you know, it's going to work out, right? To where you can control that. What's your advice to somebody who's in that 9-to-5 and trying to process that?
Well, this is the thing. It's when you realize that you are physically unable to keep up with that schedule. I mean, the signs were on the wall for me, you know, the constant weight gain, the not getting any sleep, the high level of stress, like the signs were on the wall that I physically couldn't do this.
Yeah.
And it's like, don't wait to the point where you're about to break down. Mm-hmm. Like, make the leap then. And I can say, since I made the leap, we've grown exponentially. It's like I was holding the business back.
Wow. So let me ask you, like, take us back for a second. What did you need? Like, what were your first steps, right? So doors open in April and you talk about, you know, opening up, closing, but who was there in the gap, right? Like, did you have to hire, you know, a certain number of people? Talk us through some of that.
You know, I hired, we needed instructors, had to hire a front desk team. And so even with that, there was a lot of challenges, because 2 days before we opened, I had to fire one of the front desk staff. Like, so there was always something. You never know in that first year, there's always something. And so hired a front desk staff who'd be able to kind of fill the gaps in the times that I couldn't get here, or could at least open up for me before I got here. And then hired instructors. So when I opened Harlem Cycle, I signed the lease for our space in February. And on February 14th, I got my instructor's license. So I wasn't even a licensed instructor when I signed the lease and committed to opening this studio. And so from there, I was like, well, a good business knows, I know my place. I'll just hire good instructors. That was the role, find good instructors. And I did. And I found great instructors, and they taught me how to teach and how to lead classes. And then from there, I started teaching in October of our first year.
Wow. How much time did, like, so you're talking about open and close, but like, were you working right through the weekend?
We worked every day, from the moment the idea came into my mind. Also, the moment the idea came, I couldn't stop working and working towards it. Like, either just researching, looking at other studios, going to see other instructors at their studios. Like, there just is a constant amount of work that happened. But to even open the doors, you know, so people think that opening the doors is like the first step to the business. It's months before that. It's finding a lease, negotiating the lease, finding a realtor that will accept you, you know, putting down this significant amount of money, finding a contractor, going through the permits process. So all of that had to take place before you could even hold the first class. I wish the first step was just opening my doors and people come in and take great classes. But the hard work, creating the website, all those things take a lot of time and energy before you can even put that open sign on the front door.
Yeah, absolutely. Who were you turning to? Or did you have mentorship? Did you have peers that were in business? Who were you getting input from and advice from? Or were you just going it alone on faith?
Jesus! Well, you know, my fiance, who's a fiance now, he was just a boyfriend at the time. But at the time, it was my boyfriend. I would run ideas by him. I would run ideas by my sister, who's an attorney in Atlanta. But that was kind of it.
Really?
That was kind of it. And, you know, once I started hiring my instructors, then I would run ideas by them. which I think has also helped in kind of our relationship with instructors, because all my team now has been with me since we opened.
Really?
And it's because they've been part of the birth of the studio. So it's really, you know, and then I've also been someone who's just very open for input. So it's, you know, knowing that I wasn't the expert, but they were. They work at many other studios and they can tell you what's wrong with those studios and what's right with them. And I needed to know both sides of that point.
I will debate you on that and say, yes, they were with you from the birth, but that's not the reason they likely stayed. Clearly, you've created the right environment and experience for them to stick with you all this time, right?
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I've learned it. This is a field where it's a high turnover rate.
Yeah. So, I mean, 4 years, right?
Yeah. Well, we're going on four, but yes. Yeah. So, I mean, I am very blessed with my team.
Dust them shoulders off, girl. So, no business, right? Goes through a climb straight up a ladder. You're on a rock climbing wall, right? You're jumping across. Talk me through some of the more memorable challenges or failures, and more so kind of walk us through the lessons in those valleys.
So I would say in any business, it is such an emotional roller coaster, just the ups and the downs. You know, there were days where I'm like, could one person buy something from us today? Because I still have to pay my instructors. So, you know, I think the lesson learned is always having that little pot for the bad days. So, you know, there was days where my instructors are teaching one or two people. We just opened and one or two people, only people that knew about us. But you're still paying them. You have to pay your instructor your full salary, knowing that clearly this class made zero money. So just making sure that you always look at your numbers. Now, I had figured in this into my plan. And the interesting thing is, you know, when you put together your business plan and your financials, I don't think people consider negative numbers as real numbers, but that's a real number. Mm-hmm. And that negative has to come from somewhere. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have a pot that can pull from that negative, and so for me, it was pulling from my current 9-to-5 was able to help pay the payroll and keep us afloat that first year. So that was one lesson learned, is making sure you have that safety net. Then two, you know, I've say my biggest lesson has been to hire slowly, fire quickly. Mm. I'm very meticulous. And when it comes to who joins this team, it's, you know, I want to keep our environment a certain way. And I have a certain standard of excellence when it comes to the level of classes that we're putting out there. Particularly being the first and particularly being the only in Harlem, we are setting the standard and I want that standard to be as high as possible. So I'll tell you, in the past year, I must have seen at least 50 instructors audition for me. I've hired one.
Wow.
And these instructors teach at plenty of other studios, other gyms, the top studios around here, and they're not Harlem Cycle quality for me. And to me, that's important to make sure that this is my brand and that it represents as well. Now, with that, that also puts me at a deficit. That means I can't increase my number of classes because I can't burn out my team. Mm. So because of that, I've created a training program. So if I can't find the quality that I want, I had to create a training program to get the quality that I need. Mm. So it's, you know, be meticulous in your hiring process. But when you're creating your own like gap, you need to fix that gap. And so I've created the training program that way. And so those are number two. And then I'd say the fourth one is, just remember that you are not the smartest person in the room. And I've had to learn that several times. But I've never been someone who believed that I was the smartest person in the room. But now having a team of experts who fitness is what they do. This is what they do. Having them here all the time, asking their opinions. Those have been really what keeps me grounded. And I've learned that the hard way, where I'm like, oh, let's put this class on the schedule. And everyone's like, I don't think it's going to work. I'm like, let's try it. And it fails miserably. Really? Nobody likes it but me. And so it's like, okay, step back. Maybe these people that work at plenty of other fitness studios knows what they're talking about. So listen to your team. So I've had that. I've had challenges where it's come to, like, even as I mentioned, we had to fire our front desk manager 2 days before we opened. Mm. And so, you know, it's like you saw the red flags there, you know, change it now before it just continues on. Mm. It always leaves you at a point where you're down a resource.
Yeah. No, this is good though. As we kind of look ahead, you're 4 years in, looking ahead, what's the vision? What's the next step?
So we are opening our second studio. So we're opening our next studio next year. Thank you.
Yeah.
See, and I've even planned it out much further in advance now. Not until July 2020. Mm-hmm. But we're planning that studio for July 2020. in Harlem. And then from there, we're branching out from Harlem to the different boroughs and then from the Northeast. Mm-hmm. So what I've seen is, you know, and we get this a lot, actually, a lot of people writing to our Instagrams or sending emails on how they're looking for a studio similar to Harlem in their neighborhood. And I think it's the culture that we've been able to create, the music that we're playing, the level of excellence when it comes to our classes. And people are looking for that. And so we want to make sure that we bring this around the world. I always tell people the Harlem Renaissance started in New York and it spread around the world. And so will Harlem Cycle.
Yes. The engineer in you, I imagine, lends strength to being able to create certain processes and systems, right? To fuel you being able to duplicate the business model and sort of franchise out from where you are with what's working right now, right?
Yep. So the engineer in me can't help but write everything down. I just can't help it. There's a manual for everything. Everything. There is a manual. And
that's a blessing, though.
Well, yeah, because I want this brand to stay the same no matter where I go. I always think about when I go into like a Dunkin' Donuts and like this one's great, but the one down the block is terrible. It's like, but it's the same Dunkin' Donuts. Why is that? And to me, it's like making sure we stay true to the brand by putting a couple of processes in place to make sure that that always stays the same. For me, it's writing everything down.
And it's interesting you talk about that. I'm a brand guy, right? So you talked about, you know, when we talk about brand, you're touching on something that's very unique, right? In terms of the personality.
Yeah.
And the experience that don't always carry, right? Like the donut going to taste the same. The coffee might taste the same.
Might taste the same, but...
But that hello might be stink in one place and great in another, right? So that's a really great point that you bring up about making sure that, you know, not only does the look and the product carry, but experience carries as well. And I mean, it sounds like you take ownership of that piece.
Absolutely. Working out is just 50% of the model. For us, all the 50% is all customer service and creating a complete experience from the moment you step in the doors to the moment you get back on that sidewalk. Like for us, it's all about the experience. And I always tell people I model myself after like a Trader Joe's. Like any Trader Joe's you go into, they're always happy and nice. Every single one of them. I don't know how they've been able to find 5,000 people that are happy and nice, but Harlem Cycle plans on doing the same thing.
It's a trained, you know, my wife works in luxury for the largest hotel chain in the world, and watching that experience, right? Yeah. Like that experience training is legit. I mean, they pour a lot into that training piece for the experience. Walt Disney too is another great organization for customer experience. Nice. That's awesome, Tanika. I love it. Listen, before I could keep you here for another half hour, but before we start wrapping up, tell me about a book that you've read or you're reading right now that you think we should be adding to our reading queue.
That is a hard one for me. I have to admit, I have not read a book in a while, in a long while. Let me think of what I read.
Or how do you consume? What do you consume? Are you a podcast consumer? What kind of...
Well, I do listen to a few podcasts, maybe like three or four that I'm like habitually listening to.
Including Trailblazers.fm.
Of course that one. Of course that one. But I have now found that I spend more time, like every day I get the Google updates for fitness and indoor cycling. So I read every single article that comes out every day about those two.
So you're staying on the industry.
I make sure I am on top of it, particularly because this is my background. So I feel like I'm catching up a little bit, but more it's from the forward looking.
Yeah.
So I spend a lot of time on reading articles every day on health and wellness, fitness, but also kind of the psychology of it. Because this is the industry, you know, where we're not here to make you feel bad about your body. It's here to get you towards wellness. So I read a lot on body positivity. I read a lot, go to a lot of events on body positivity to make sure that I am reaching and touching my clients in the way that they need to be spoken to. But I'm at a loss of what I've read.
I'm in a batch series. So I apologize to my listeners because I probably said this in two or three interviews in the last couple of days. And I'm, for those of you who are not familiar with my process, I'll batch, you know, four or five, six interviews in a tight window of time. So sometimes what I'm seeing carries one episode to the next, but I'll share with you. I have been very actively consuming books now through audio. I have all these books right behind me that many of them I want to get into, and I can thumb through a chapter or two, but I rarely ever finish a hardcover anymore. where I will consume book after book in, because I'm a podcaster. I consume audio. I'm a podcast listener as much as I am, you know, a podcast host. And I found, like, in the last month, I've listened to at least three books that I'm thinking of right now. And most recently, I just finished Brian J. Dixon's new book, Start With Your People. I think you'd really enjoy that one as well. But business guy, marketing brain, very dialed into the experience as well. I think you'd enjoy it. You know, Christian brother, Christian guy, that wife and kids and so on. But check out Start With Your People. I think it'd be a good audiobook. And the thing with audio, you listen to it while you're doing 10 other things, right? So you can consume it. But give it a shot and see how you like that.
I will. I'll add it to the list. I'll let you know when I do it.
Yes, yes. So last question for you. Before we get into the last question, tell our listeners how we can stay connected and learn more about Harlem Cycle.
Well, you can always find us online through Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Harlem Cycle. Then you can also find us via the web at www.harlem-cycle.com. And you can always email me at info@harlem-cycle.com.
Good stuff. Tamika, last question for you. What's one action we can take this week that's going to help us to blaze our trail?
One action is to, let me think. Oh, that's a deep one. Is to really sit down and kind of do your SWOT analysis of yourself. I think the best thing to blaze your trail is to understand who you are as a person and where your weaknesses and strengths are, and then work from there.
Love it. Tamika Rochester, thank you so much for being our guest.
Thank you for having me. This has been awesome. Thank you so much.
I'm Steve Nehart, and you've been listening to the Trailblazers.fm podcast. If you're not yet doing so, consider following Trailblazers.fm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and feel free to connect with me over on LinkedIn. Whenever you're posting stories or social media posts about Trailblazers.fm, be sure to use the hashtag TBPod and hashtag Mission Fuel. We'll be able to see you, and I'll be able to show some love. And in case you're not aware, our show notes for all our episodes can be found on our website over at tbpod.com. Now, if today was your first time listening, I just want to say big ups, enough respect for checking us out. You've made this Jamaican guy really happy that you're here with us today. And I'd love your help with keeping this Black excellence flowing each and every week. So if you haven't yet subscribed, hop on over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Search trailblazers.fm and subscribe, rate, and review us there. Be sure to browse through some of our past episodes. There are more than 150 published episodes now, and a little something is out there for everyone to help keep the knowledge flowing. We grow when you, as part of our Blazer Nation community, shares and invites your friends and family to listen to an episode you think might impact them most. We believe that someone listening to these inspiring stories are going to be moved to make significant changes that have generational impact for many others, both now and well into the future. Don't miss next week's episode. New episodes are released each and every Monday morning at 5 a.m. Eastern. Blazer Nation, go out today and find a way to rise above, go way beyond, and keep blazing your trail.